Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on incorrigible delinquency when we come back. Well, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. It's Lyell's concepts that are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood have been strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Well, listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report reported worldwide in the AP, UP, and Reuters. And it made this surprising statement. It said, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. And scientists have been watching this phenomenon for over 100 years, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then that totals 1% per millennium. And if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, then it would have been double its present size. And only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would have been touching the Earth, 93 million miles in diameter. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been constant or consistent since the origin of the sun. Now, let's think about that. What did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Remember, that happened 65 million years ago. But 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter. Now, listen, boys and girls, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on these kinds of science and pseudoscientific lies. And that's just one more of our many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades now as science. And it's one more of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that we conduct twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Your call is directed 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it. All right, we've been talking about incorrigible delinquency. You know, our government promises things. You ever notice that? Politicians, right now in this election cycle, Barack Obama, he says, you elect me president and I'm going to give you national health care insurance. Well, I'm going to solve your medical problems. I mean, that's the outcome of it. You know, the rest of you people in the world have socialized medicine. Here in America, we don't want socialized medicine. We want national health care insurance. Same thing, we're just going to call it something different. And what did that do for you people in England or Canada, Australia, where you have socialized medicine already? You know, we take a look at the outcome. You know, when you take actions, you get outcomes. You get something here that's different than you had before. So the state comes in here. This is your politicians, and they promise you reduced taxes. You vote for me, and I'll reduce your taxes. But that doesn't happen. Your taxes go up. George Bush promised us a tax reduction program, and he reduced taxes for one group of people, but it raised taxes on another group. The overall tax take today is greater than it was, and they called that tax reduction. So they promise to reduce taxes, but the reality of it is they raise them. Then they promise peace. You know, vote. I'm all for peace and prosperity. A chicken in every pot and a car in every garage. Okay, that's what they promise. Then you get war. In this case, you get two wars. And there's another one coming up, a third one on the horizon. And then they say, well, elect me and you'll have happiness. We'll have happy families. We're here to produce, you know middle class and happiness. And it produces misery. You know, you take a look and ask the average guy today, what do you think of your president and Congress? And they say, well, we give the president a 24% approval rating, and Congress, I think, was down to 9 yesterday. I don't know. Nobody's happy with the politics or the political circumstances. The people are miserable. They promised us happiness, but they gave us misery. Prosperity. Hey, vote for me. We'll have a growing economy. Prosperity is coming. No, we're headed toward depression, hyperinflation, unemployment. The economy is upside down. The value of your house now is decreasing. Prosperity. That's not prosperity. Come on, wake up. Then they promise us drug-free environment. We got a war on drugs. We're going to abolish heroin and cocaine, all these illegal drugs. We're going to do away with them. You've got more drugs on the street. Listen, drugs are out there on the street in greater proportion to the population than ever before. You know, you used to have to go out there and work hard to find cocaine and heroin. Now it's out there everywhere now. It's easier to find today than it ever has been, and at cheaper prices. Cheaper prices. How about more jobs? No, we don't have more jobs. Our jobs are decreasing. They're offshoring, outsourcing, and practicing free trade. We got less and less of them. Every time your politician promises you something, he's going to try to deliver that to you, and he's going to do it through this governmental process, the political process, and he fails every single time. I want you to write me, take the challenge, write me an email, and you tell me the one exception to that rule. You tell me where the political process has actually performed for us. It gave us what they said they were going to give us. Did they give us lower taxes, more peace, happier families, greater prosperity? Have they solved the drug problem? Have they increased jobs and employment? Now go on, and if it isn't one of those subjects, go on, tell me what it is. You know, they promise us that we're going to have better schools. Our children are dumber today than they've ever been in the history of the country. Dumb. Your kid is dumber than you are, and you're dumber than your parents were, and your parents were dumber than their grandparents. And then you can rest assured that the children in school today are going to be dumber yet, and their children will be dumber yet. And that's not an accident. The decline in educational standards over here is an agenda. It's designed that way. And I said, you know, they're promising us over happy families and less crime. No, we got more crime and more juvenile delinquency than we've ever had. And more to come. Ain't seen nothing yet. It's going to get worse. So I thought, well, let's take a look at this. Where did it come from? How did it get started? So last time I said, well, who owns your kid? Well, the state owns your kid. Let's go back in history a little bit and find out, has it always been that way? The answer is no. No, the state did not always own your child. So in the last program, I said, listen, have you ever heard about bond servitude? We talked about bond servitude and slavery a little bit in the 13th Amendment and the Emancipation Proclamation. And we talked about birth registration and marriage licenses and so on. Or, you know, when you take action, there will be a conclusion. And when you change from the Ten Commandments to communism, you're going to have a change. You're going to have a different outcome. When we practice the Ten Commandments in our economics, from 1787 to 1933, America practiced the Ten Commandments. In 1933, President Roosevelt changed the program over from the Ten Commandments to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Are things different today since 1933? Just take the period 1933 to 2008 and then compare that with 1787 to 1933. Compare those two periods in history. Do we now have more taxes and higher taxes today under the Ten Planks than we had under the Ten Commandments in the two comparable time periods? And the answer is absolutely and unequivocally. Do we now have more peace or more war than we had in that period of time from 1787 to 1933? And the answer is it's more war, more severe wars, greater threat of war. In fact, in the 20th century, just that 100-year period from 1900 to 2000, killed 100 million people worldwide in war. It is the most destructive century in the history of mankind, the 20th century. How about happy families over here? Remember that promising peace and prosperity? Do we have more prosperity now in 2008 than we had from 1787 to 1933? And the answer is absolutely not, and a resounding no. Somebody says, well, we got a higher standard of living. Well, where'd you get that? You borrowed it from the Chinese. Hell, you people don't own your cars. You don't own your houses. But my granddad in 1900 owned his house, owned his wagon and his horses, and owned his land and his cattle. There used to be a time in America when we owned things. Drug-free. Hell, we got more drugs today and more drug problems today. Listen, if you're 65 or older, you're taking six drugs if you're average. We're not drug-free. We're a nation of drug addicts. Wake up. More jobs. No. Manufacturing in 1960 represented 63% of our economy. Today it's 9% and falling. You have less jobs today. Now somebody's going to say, well, in 1960 we only had 150 million people. No, we got 300. We got more jobs. There's more unemployment today. Oh, no. The unemployment rate is only 5%. No, it isn't. It's 13%. Your government's lying to you. Now somebody's going to say, oh, no, no, I don't think the government lies to us. Well, okay, dream on. I just want to report the facts to you, and you believe what you want. Okay. But our subject is incorrigible delinquency. And where did it come from? It came from government. The government promised you that we would have less juvenile delinquency. The results are you have more juvenile delinquency. See, if the government said, we want to give you more war, we want to raise your taxes. We want you to be miserable. We're going to give you depression. We want to give you more drugs, and we want to take your job away from you. If they came out and told you the truth, you wouldn't vote for that guy. And so they know that. And so they continue and they promise you. But you can't. I don't think you can point to one single promise made by any politician over the last 75 years that has actually come to pass. Not one. And if you can, send me an email. Write me. Call me. Let me put it on the air. Let me broadcast it from coast to coast and border to border around the world and tell everybody, my God, government succeeded in one area, one item. I don't even think you can point to one. I can't. Of course, that doesn't mean I know everything, but I couldn't. So I wanted to know why. What in the hell happened over here? So I went back in history here and I took a look around and I said, well, who owned these children when we were practicing the Ten Commandments? And that is, mom and dad owns the children. Not even God Almighty himself ever claimed to own the child. Gave you the child, gave you power over the child. Now, he gave you some laws. He did tell you, here's what you got to do. If you want to have a happy, healthy child who's drug-free, trained for society, if you want prosperity and peace and reduced taxes, there's laws that produce that outcome, and they're called the Ten Commandments. And if you don't practice these Ten Commandments, then you're going to get a bad outcome, and he tells you what the bad outcome's going to be. You can read about the good and bad outcomes. Remember, we've talked about that before. It's in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. You get 33 articulable benefits for practicing the Ten Commandments, and you got 107 curses or penalties that you get for violating them, and that's the outcome that comes from make your choice. So I'm not here to tell you that you should stop sending your children to public school. Not on a crusade to abolish public education. But it is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, and it has an outcome, and juvenile delinquency is one of those outcomes. Just one. There's other bad outcomes, but that's one of them. That's my report telling you. Now, we were talking last time about these two little girls that went up and burned their school here in Springfield, Missouri, and it took the children out of the home, and I showed you why. The child belongs to the state, and the state is going to correct their child. What role, then, does the parents of the child have? They have reduced themselves to babysitters. Mom and dad are now babysitters of the owner of the child that has now adopted the child through the birth certificate and the marriage license and is now owned by the state. The state then is in a guardian ward relationship with you, a guardian ward relationship with the child. You're the babysitter. The state's the owner of the child. The child misbehaves, so we're going to take and change babysitters. Or we're going to counsel the babysitters and we're going to point out to the babysitters that they haven't been doing their job and that if they don't shape up, we're going to change babysitters. Now, there's an emotional tie between parents and their children, and the fear of losing your child makes you, get in line, follow the social lady's instructions. You may not like it, but you'll do it. You may complain about it, but you'll shut up and do it. Now, let me show you here about this ownership of children as recently as 1854. So let's go back a little bit in history to 1854. Here's a case that comes out of a sample case. There's many of them, but just a sample that comes out of Iowa. And so here's a paragraph out of a case. This is a divorce case in Iowa. This is a divorce and child custody case out of Iowa in 1854. This is before marriage licenses. This is before birth certificates. All right, listen to this. In consideration of the rights and duties of the father in relation to his child, he could not. This case here, before cited, the People versus Mercer, we think fully recognizes this principle. Judge Brunson there, in addition to what is held to be law on this point by Judge Cowan, says, quote, the opinion of this court has been repeatedly expressed that by the law of the land, the common law, the claims of the father are superior to those of the mother. And he also refers to a former opinion sustaining the same doctrine delivered by him in that controversy. This doctrine is maintained by numerous decisions of courts of the highest authority in this country. Unquote. Hunt versus Hunt. That was decided back in 1854. The claims of the father against a mother in a child custody case are superior. And it goes back to the Garden of Eden. And there's a controversy that developed there. See, at the Garden of Eden, God told Eve, he said, your husband Adam is going to rule over you. He's going to be your superior. He's going to be the sergeant. And you're going to be the soldier. Or in maritime terms, the man is going to be the captain, and you're going to be the first mate. And women have been chafing against that from that day to this. It's almost like the controversy concerning states' rights, which was, by the way, settled at Appomattox Courthouse. I liked old Mao Zedong's conclusion. He said, political power comes from the muzzle of a gun. Political power comes from the muzzle of a gun. And that's what we decided at Appomattox Courthouse. Bottom line, political power comes from the muzzle of a gun. Now, God comes along and he says, well, let me direct you here, boys and girls. Let me tell you how this has to work. And then we come along and say, no, we don't like that law. We're not going to practice that. So there was a time when we used to have dad at the head of the family, and mom was the first mate, and she understood her position and followed it. Children came along as a result of this union, and father, being the head of the family, the owner, and being responsible for the deprivations under strict liability for every damage his kid caused, understood full well that as a matter of law, if my kid goes out and causes $100,000 damage, I've got to pay for it. And if I don't pay for it, somebody's going to bore a hole through my ear, take me into bond servitude, and make me work it off, pay every damn dime. Now, we don't like that kind of responsibility, and so we would like to have limited liability, an insurance policy. And so here's the state's offer. The state says, give your kid to me, and if your kid goes out and causes $100,000 damage, you don't have to pay for it. These two families are not going to pay that $100,000 damage on that school. The state's going to pay it. And why is the state going to pay it? Because it's the state's child. The state's going to pay for the damage to the school because it's the state's child, not the family's. Now, under strict liability, it would have been the family, the owner of the child, pays the damage. We do that today. Your dog goes out and bites somebody. Who's liable? Who do we sue, the dog No, we sue the dog's owner. So the dog's owner doesn't want to be responsible for his dog biting somebody, so he buys homeowner's insurance. Now who's responsible when the dog bites somebody? The insurance company. So the claims manager of the insurance company comes over to the policyholder and says, wait a minute, Buster, you ain't keeping control of your dog. So we're going to cancel your policy. We're going to double your premiums. We're going to go to the police power, the city council, and get a law passed to take your dog away from you. So now if you got a pit bull, you got to license it. And if your pit bull bites somebody, the city comes over, takes your pit bull away from you, and destroys it. See how that works? But you're not liable. You don't have to pay. Why? You got limited liability. Now remember, the Bible requires, God requires, strict liability. So what's happened? Well, boys and girls, we all woke up one day and we said, look, we don't like the order of things that God has instituted. We don't like women. Say, we don't like being second in command. We want to be first in command. Well, okay, it's come to pass. You ladies are now first in command. There's no doubt about that. Hell, I'm not here to argue with you. Women now are in control. And God told you, he said, listen, children are your oppressors and women rule over you. And sure enough, these women are ruling over you. But I want to point out to you, ladies, there's an outcome that comes from that. Now, I told you in the last program, you know, there was a pitcher with the New York Yankees who had sold him, he didn't sell himself to the Mariners, but he sold himself to the New York Yankees. See, he was recruited. He's just a kid playing ball out here, sandlot or in college or something like that. And some guy walks up to him and says, you know, you got some real talent there, boy. How would you like to pitch for the New York Yankees? And the young boy said, wow, yeah, I'd really like to pitch for the New York Yankees. Here, sign this contract, son. And the kid signed a contract. He literally sold himself to the New York Yankees. It's called bond servitude. Now, that's strictly regulated and controlled. Now, if you're an average Joe Sixpack, you can't just sell yourself to anybody. Man, you can't come over here and sell yourself to George Gordon because, see, the 13th Amendment bars that. There's no private ownership of slaves in the United States. You can't have private ownership of bondservants in the United States. We used to have that. There used to be a time in America when George Gordon or Joe Sixpack could go into the marketplace and buy a slave. There was a time when any individual in America could walk in to the marketplace and buy a bondservant. But in 1862, our political establishment in the form of Abraham Lincoln said, this is bad. Bond servitude is bad. Slavery is bad. Where did slavery and bond servitude come from? It came from the creator of the universe. Remember the God that created Adam and Eve, did the Adam and Eve trick in the Garden of Eden? That's where slavery came from. That's where bond servitude came from. That's where polygamy came from. Now, our political establishment has abolished polygamy, abolished bond servitude, and abolished slavery. Well, okay. You didn't have the power to do that, so you just did it anyway. Okay. I'm not disagreeing with you. You did it, and you got an outcome from it. There's a result that comes from that law, that legal practice. Now, your God said practice strict liability, and you said, no, we're not going to practice strict liability. We're going to practice insurance. Okay, I don't disagree with you. You did, you do, and you're going to continue to, but there's an outcome. There's a result, and the result is going to be something different than if you practiced polygamy, bond servitude, slavery, and strict liability. So when you abolish slavery, abolish bond servitude, abolish polygamy, you're going to get something different. Okay. Now, what you've got here is a difference in the ownership of the children. And that's one of the outcomes that comes from this practice. I don't know if that's good or bad. I'll let you make the decision. You know, you if you're happy with the way things are in America today or in Canada, Australia, I don't care where you live, Brazil, China, Japan, Azerbaijan, if you're happy with the way things are going, you know, take a look at Rhodesia. The people in Rhodesia in 1980 had a dollar that was equal to the same dollar of the United States and its value in 1980. And they elected, they threw out the white regime, and they elected a new one. They adopted communism. They're practicing communists in Rhodesia. And their president, Mugabe, over there is practicing communist economic policy and philosophy. They don't have gold and silver coin. They have unjust weights and balances. They have paper currency, commercial paper, stock market, and all the things that we have in America. And they have 100,000% inflation per year. There was a time when they didn't have inflation. They had gold and silver coin. There was a time when they had a robust first world economy. Today they have degenerated into a third world economy. Why? What happened in Rhodesia? The answer to that is they changed their law. And when they changed their law, they changed their king. When they changed their king, they got a different result. Now, we did that back in ancient times. Let me take you back in history here and show you where the process began. It started about 1000 BC in 1 Samuel chapter 8. You flip over here to 1 Samuel chapter 8 in the Bible. And you'll find a political event transpiring here, political event. And the people came to Samuel and they said, we want a king like all the nations around us. It's only 19 verses long, I think it is. I'll flip over here and I'll see. 22 verses long. First Samuel chapter 8. This is the political change that occurred. This is where you women, and men and women, but this is where you women made the first step now toward this emancipation process, toward equality in politics, where you're now going to take over the position of captain. You know, you were first mate and you didn't like that position, so now you're going to throw the captain out and you're going to become the captain of the ship. Okay, captain lady, you know, this is where we're at in America today. Australia, Canada, Western Australia. I mean, you people in Australia. So in 1 Samuel 8, the people come to Samuel and say, we want a king like all the nations around us. Now Samuel goes to God. This is the, you know, the creator of Adam and Eve. I want to distinguish this God from the ordinary run-of-the-mill gods that you people normally worship. And Samuel said to God, hey, these people are rebelling against me. And he said, no, Sam, wake up. Smell the coffee here. They're not rebelling against you, Sam. They're rebelling against me. They hate me, not you. Jesus made the same observation. He says, why do you people call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? I mean, if we were going to practice the law of God, if we were going to practice the scripture and obey God and keep his commandments, then we would be practicing strict liability in place of insurance, polygamy in place of monogamy. We would be practicing bond servitude in place of, see what's the opposite of bond servitude over here, the 13th Amendment. We would still be practicing slavery in this country. Oh, God, black people say, gasping like Judy Hart's in slavery. Now, all of us, you know, all of us Democrats and Republicans and politicos out there, we all know that these laws are bad. That's hell, that's why we repealed them. All right, now listen up. Here's what God said. He said, according to all of the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto you. Now, this isn't something new. We have rebelled against God from the day that we came out of Egypt. So he said, okay, look, let's test this. Let's find out how it's going to work. These people do not want to practice the Ten Commandments. They've got their own ideas. They don't want me as their king. They want their own king. Here in America, we're not satisfied with the God of creation. We want our own king, George Bush. Well, now we're a little dissatisfied with George, so now we want a new king. And we're going to select a new king over America. We call him president over here. Okay. And so he said, now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. So God told Samuel, says, now go warn these people. Tell them, look, when you change your king, you change your law. When you change your law, you're going to change the outcome. We're working with the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. You shall not murder. This is the law, you know, just weights and balances, gold and silver coin, no stock markets. We're going to practice slavery and bond servitude and in place of a bankruptcy and so on. No, the people said, no, 1,000 times no, we won't do that. Okay. And we haven't. And that was 1,000 BC. That was 3,000 years ago. We told God 3,000 years ago, kiss off. We ain't doing it. And this God, a little different guy than you're used to over here, this God said, okay, I'll get the hell out of your life. I'll butt out. I'll let you people live your lives. You can practice insurance. You can abolish the family relationship. You can change the man as the head of the family to the woman. You can let women rule over you, and you can have your children as oppressors. It's okay. I'll butt out. Leave you alone. But he told us, you know, having juvenile delinquents, you know, kids throwing themselves on the floor, kicking and screaming and throwing temper tantrums because you won't buy them Fruit Loops at the supermarket ain't good. I told you that. Kids, you know, that don't mind, that's not good. So I told you about this Arab guy over here. Now, God gave you, parents, the power of life and death over your children. He said, now, exercise this power of life and death over your children pursuant to these laws. You know, you don't just go out here and kill your kid because you're tired of supporting him. You got to take him out to the elders of the city. You got to testify against him and say, this kid won't mind. And he strikes his parents, he smites them, and he curses them, and he's incorrigible. And you people woke up and said, that's not kind and gentle. Well, we're going to abolish that. And so here's this Muslim guy practicing this law. The Muslim guy, see, he came over to the United States. He signed a contract. He was an immigrant. He said, I'll obey all the laws of the United States. And then he started practicing the laws of Lebanon over here. He got himself into trouble, is what happened. I just wanted to point out that you used to have this biblical law, but you rejected it back here in 1 Samuel chapter 8. Now you're going to sit there and say, I didn't do that. Oh, wait a minute. You do it every day. You have ratified and reinforced this process, this political process, every time you go to the polls and vote. Hell, you people don't vote for God, the creator of the universe. He's not a Democrat. He doesn't believe in democracy. And furthermore, he said he's coming back and take over the world. And when he comes back, he's not going to run for election against Barack Obama. He's just not going to do that. This guy's an autocrat. And when he comes back, he's not going to ask you for your support. He's not going to ask you if you approve of his policies or his laws or his statutes and judgments and commandments. He's not going to ask you if you approve of his law that says thou shalt not commit adultery. He doesn't care. He doesn't give a rat's ass what you think. I mean, maybe you think he does, but he doesn't. I'm here to tell you, he don't care. And the reason I know that is because he said so right here in 1 Samuel chapter 8. And you know, unless this guy's space case and he doesn't know what he said 3,000 years ago, I think he can probably remember. I don't think this God is suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Listen to the bottom line here. When it's all said and done, he says, this king is going to take the tenth of your sheep, and you will be his servants. You will be his servants. He is going to own you. And I showed you that last time. The Attorney General of Texas says he's going to own you, and he's going to own your children. And socially, he's going to come out and take your kids right out of your home and place them wherever she wants them. That's the outcome that you're going to get. Now, we have now in America the outcome that God told us we were going to get. You're going to have a king that's going to do this. Listen to this. He says, Samuel told all the words of the Eternal to the people that asked of him a king. And he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. Your king, your president, will take your sons and appoint them for himself and for his chariots and to be his horsemen. And some shall run before his chariots. And he shall appoint him captains over thousands, captains over fifties, and he will set them to ear his ground, to reap his harvest, to make his instruments of war, and instruments of his chariots. That's your military-industrial complex. He'll take your daughters to be confectionaries and cooks and to be bakers. He'll take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards and even the best of them and give them to his servants. He's going to take a tenth of your seed. He's going to tax you to death. You have your vineyards and give them to his officers and servants. He's going to take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. And that's where we're at today. And then that's just the tip of the iceberg. Hell, it's 10 times worse than that. And then he says, you will cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you, and the Eternal will not hear you in that day. And so you're crying out, we want to change. Save us from George Bush. Okay. You want to change. The king that you're going to select in this election is going to be worse than George Bush. If you think that you got problems with George Bush, you ain't seen Jack Dilly squat yet. You wait until you get a Democratic president with a Democratic Congress with what he believes to be a mandate for governance like Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1933, and you're going to have communism up your hind end like you ain't never seen before. Watch that. Watch this trick. Now, I got to give you a reminder here before the FCC puts us off the air. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in 112 countries plus daily worldwide over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio logs, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our webpage, our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour websites, or programs rather, are archived on the Internet on our website by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. So be sure to order one for yourself. The number is 417-273-4967. That number to call now is 417-273-4967. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about delinquency, incorrigible delinquency. Okay, now let's start putting some of these lines between these dots, and let's see if we can start putting the lines and dots together to draw us a picture over here. So, incorrigible delinquency is public policy. We want it. We desire it. Now, that's not you and I. We'd like our children to obey us and go get a haircut. No one will give them 4 bits. Hey, go down and get your haircut. But our children don't do that, and we don't raise and rear our children the way we used to under the Ten Commandments because we don't have the authority to do that anymore. It's just the way it is. If you were to exercise the authority, the power that you have over your child under the law of God and the Ten Commandments, that kid will be taken away from you in a heartbeat. So you have to back off. You cannot exercise the kind of power and authority that God gave you. And why did God, the Creator, give you this kind of power and authority? The power of life and death over your child. Because when your child knows and understands that you have the power of life and death over him, he will obey your voice. And if he doesn't, he dies. And when your son or daughter at age 10, 11, 12, 15, 18 years old sees some other teenager over here die in a public execution for disobedience to his parents, he isn't going to do that. And that's why in Muslim countries where they practice this, they don't have any juvenile delinquency. Now, I say any. You know, there's always going to be a free spirit kid, you know, that says, hey, I got to test this. There's always got to be a rebel without a cause. And it's the rebel without a cause that can't mind, can't get his hair cut, can't shut up, can't fold his hands, can't do what he's told, can't mind Aunt Bessie, can't mind Dad, can't mind Granddad, can't mind this policeman, can't mind the soldier, can't mind the sergeant. You know, what are you going to do with it? Well, the solution here is, well, let's restrain him. We'll lock him up in prison forever and spend $35,000, $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 a year for the rest of his life. That's not good for the guy that you've locked up. How would you like to be locked up in a cage like a gorilla or chimpanzee for the rest of your life? You call that kind and gentle? You know, we got a clause in our Constitution here for the rest of you people in the world that prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. Do you know that in the Bible, the creator of the universe never prescribed prison as a punishment? So I throw that out there. Now, he has prescribed death as a punishment, but not prison. To lock a human being up like an animal in a cage, that's cruel and unusual punishment. Now, of course, here in America, we have a different take on cruel and unusual punishment from our creator. So we abolish capital punishment and lock these people up in a cage for the rest of their lives. This same God, by the way, in Deuteronomy, there's two places here in Deuteronomy where he gives us some advice, gives us some instruction. He said, now, listen, I am the lawmaker. My name is God, and I'm the lawmaker. That's really not his name, but that's what we call him. And he says that in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, he says, you shall not add unto the word which I command you, and neither shall you diminish aught from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. He's given us an instruction. This is a statute. He says, I don't want you to change my law. When I give you a law that says we're going to practice polygamy, I don't want you to change that. And so what do? We changed it. We've outlawed polygamy. God gave us a law concerning insurance and strict liability. He says, don't change that law. So we changed it. We now practice limited liability in place of strict liability. And then there's 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. They're organized into 133 titles of law, and we have changed 83 of them. Here in the United States of America, at this moment in time, I'm here to report to you, we have changed 80, I said 83, didn't I? Let me flip back here and let me find out. I usually count these things up. 82 is the number. Now there's 133, so let's just plug that in here, 133 titles of law, and we have changed 83 of them, or 82 of them. 82 we've changed. So let me go 133, let's take 82, leaves 51. We are still practicing 51, and we're violating 82. The other day, a student brought this up in class the other day. Let me pass it on to you. He said, did you remember just a couple of months ago the Supreme Court of California legalized same-sex marriages? And I said, yeah, it seems to me. He said, did you notice that California is burning up? I said, yeah, I've been watching in the news, but I never put the two together, Sodom and Gomorrah in California. I think that you're getting a subliminal message out there in California concerning the same-sex marriage here, boys and girls. Now, I'm not here as a preacher. I'm not a preacher. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a priest. I'm a reporter. I'm an investigative reporter. I'm a law school instructor. I teach law. But I want to tell you that there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. It doesn't happen under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It doesn't happen under the Constitution of the United States. It doesn't happen under the United States Code Annotated. It doesn't happen under the law of Vernon's Missouri Code Annotated. I don't know of any place in the world where you can break a law without a penalty. Now, it's true, you can break a law and not get caught. I don't deny that. I mean, that's why you've got that radar detector on the dashboard of your car. You intend to break the law. Everybody with a radar detector intends to break the law. There isn't any other purpose for it. I don't have a radar detector in my car. And that's because I do not intend to violate the speed law. When I see a sign that says slow to 35, I slow to 35. And when I see a sign that says speed limit 70 or 55 or whatever, I try hard to drive the speed limit. But that's just me. Now, I'm not telling you to drive the speed limit or don't have a radar detector. That's your choice in life. You know, you have a right to choose. Now, there's a law here that says thou shalt not commit adultery. And so I don't practice adultery. I used to. I've done it. I know how to do that. If you want some firsthand experience, you know, come to me. I can show you how to do that. But after I did that a time or two, I came to a conclusion. I said, I don't think that's very wise. I don't think that's a good policy. That's not a good practice. It doesn't gain me anything. In fact, it'll probably get me AIDS, herpes, and VD. And that's a penalty that I don't want. So that's why I thought I would bring this to your attention. This incorrigible delinquency over here is an outcome. It's a result of broken law. And you parents are breaking these laws. And the ultimate responsibility for this incorrigible delinquency is with the parents, the creators of the child. That's where the ultimate responsibility lies. And you parents decided that you were going to practice some laws. You're going to get a birth certificate. You're going to get a marriage license. It was a choice that you had to make, and you made it. And there's an outcome that comes from it. And that brings in social lady, the police, and the school teacher. That brings in the political process. It brings in property and property rights. It brings in the state. It brings in the police power of the state. It brings in politics. Well, okay. Evidently, that's what you wanted, because that's what you voted for. Now you got a bad result that comes from it. Now you want relief, and so you're going to pray to Jesus. And I showed you just a few minutes ago, he said, I will not hear you. Let me read it to you again. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 8. Let me flip back here to 1 Samuel chapter 8. Said, I'm not going to listen to this crap. Now, there's a logical answer to this. I'll come to that when we get to it. He says, you'll cry out to me in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen. You and the Eternal will not hear you in that day. Go ahead and vote for Barack Obama. I don't care. Go ahead and pray to Jesus. See if it does you any good. It won't. And he told you so. So I think we're going to have to come up with a little different solution. Now, let me show you a little something here. We'll start here today. I won't finish it, but we'll start here on Parents Patrae. This parents' patrie has a bad public policy. this is why your children rule over you, or rather, children are your oppressors and women rule over you. It has to do with this thing called the doctrine of parents' patrie. And this is an article by Jeffrey Blunstein, B-L-U-S-T-E-I-N, and it was published in summer, fall. Let's see what the publication was. It's called Criminal Justice Ethics, and then it was the summer, fall edition of Criminal Justice Ethics. Jeffrey Blunstein, B-L-U-S-T-E-I-N, wrote a great article here. You can get this same information out of a legal encyclopedia. And so he went to the legal encyclopedia, looked up the doctrine of parents patrae, and he wrote an article. And I think I'll share this article with you. In this paper, I will explore the philosophical foundations of the venerable but little discussed doctrine of parents patrae. More specifically, I am interested in the way in which this doctrine conceives of the three-way relationship among the child, the parent, and the state. The three-way partnership between the child, the parent, and the state. And in the scope of state control over parent-child relations that the doctrine may be taken to justify, who shall argue that while society has a legitimate interest in the upbringing of its children, the doctrine's central underlying thesis that parents are merely the agents of society in the area of child rearing. Let me pause here for a moment, and let me point this out. This doctrine of parents patrae, it has a central underlying thesis, and here's what it is. And that is that the parents are merely the agents of society in the area of child rearing. Now, that's the exact opposite from the doctrine from Scripture that gives absolute life and death power over the child to the parents. Now, you may be sitting there saying, well, I don't want life and death power over my child. Well, okay, lighten up, I don't care. I'm not offended. But if you don't have life and death power over your child, you can't control him. That's the bottom line. Now, the state has life and death control over the child, and they exercise it. It's called the police power. They won't exercise it prior to this child reaching the age of 18. I think the Supreme Court just came down with a new decision here just recently over children. I think they said it's cruel and unusual to kill a kid before he's 18 or 21. I forgot what the age was. So, you know, if we want to, we can change these laws, but, you know, our Creator told us that it's not good public policy, it's not good personal, private, or family policy, and it's going to come back and bite you in the ass. That's what he told you. Now, we haven't listened to him in the past. We aren't listening to him today, and it's not likely that we're going to listen to him in the future. So as a reporter, I just want to come and tell you, okay, well, you're going to get a result that comes from that. And the result that comes from it is going to be bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil, and you ain't going to like it. And there's going to be weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth. And most of it's going to be your weeping, your wailing, and your gnashing of teeth. That's where most of it's going to come from. So I just thought I'd pass that on to you. Now, Jeffrey Blunstein over here is analyzing the legal ramifications of the doctrine of parents patrae. Now, this doctrine of parents patrae is the absolute opposite. It's the absolute antithesis to the Scripture. And this is what we practice. And I thought I would share it with you and explain it to you so that you'll know why social lady is going to take your kid, why it is that you're terrified of social lady and the police and the teacher in public school, and why it is that that fear is properly placed because they have all of that power and more. And they're going to exercise it. And they're going to exercise it against you and against your child, whether you like it or not. But I wanted to emphasize that you're the one that created it. You're the one that did it. You, mom and dad, are the proximate cause of your own injury. And I would suggest that you correct that. That was my conclusion. I said, oh my God, I did this. I got a marriage license. I got birth certificates. I did it. Hell, I did it all. So I'm not here to tell you that, you know, hey, I'm righteous and you're wicked. Hey, I did this. And when I did it, it didn't work for me either. I tried this. This alimony, child support, social lady, policeman, teacher, police power of the state, and the loss of control over your child and juvenile delinquency as a result, I tested it. I didn't like it. Never talked to anybody that did. And that's why I got to ask the question, well, if we don't like the outcome that we're getting, we're not really too happy about it. Have you ever thought about going back to the system that we had before that worked? I've got to tell you, it's a wild new concept. I don't deny it, but have you ever thought about that? The parents are merely the agents of the society in this area of child rearing, and it rests on untenable principles of political morality. and it has implications that are profoundly anti-liberal. And at the same time, it is important to note that the doctrine of parens patriae represents a particular conception of parenthood as a fiduciary or trust-like relationship, and that the application of the fiduciary concept to parenthood may provide the rudiments of an acceptable theory of parenthood, even though this particular conception ultimately turns out to be indefensible. I mean, you can defend this doctrine of parens patriae, but ultimately it is indefensible because it takes away the parent's power over the child. So we want the parents over here to control the children and prevent this incorrigible delinquency, but we take away from them the power to do that. Well, now what kind of sense does that make? If the state didn't have the power, they couldn't enforce the law. That's why they have to have the police power. But if the state has the police power to enforce the law, then the parents or the citizens can't have it. He said, I'm going to divide the discussion into two parts, beginning with an examination of what can and cannot be attributed to fiduciary relationships as such, and then move on to a consideration of the specific claim that parents are granted fiduciary powers over the children of both states. We'll examine these powers of parenthood granted by God in the Bible and the powers that are taken away by the state next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, I've got to remind you here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily worldwide over the internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. Of course, so until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.